If you could go anywhere in the world and share a musical experience with the people there, where would you go and what would you do?
Well, this is a... So this can be anything, right?
Yes, anything. Sky's the limit.
Joan Krizwicki.
My name is Joan Krizwicki.
Is a pianist, a teacher.
In a suburb of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
A parent, a grandparent, and more.
And I am currently the chair-elect of the board of directors of the SAA.
And she's been playing the piano for a while.
Well, the earliest thing I remember is I think I was about 5 and my mother bought a piano. And before that, I had been somewhat precocious and I had sort of taught myself how to read words just by asking a lot of questions. Nobody formally taught me, I just figured it out. And so when my mother bought the piano, she also bought this book, Teaching Little Fingers to Play. And it was sitting there on the piano, and so I crawled up and started reading the book and teaching myself how to play the piano. And so my mother thought, well, I better get you a teacher. So I was either about to turn 6 or I had turned 6, and she was a young woman in the neighborhood that I started taking lessons from. I still keep in touch with her today. She's now in her late 80s, and we still correspond. But that was where I began, and then I took to it very quickly. I progressed very quickly. I think I was about 10 when I knew that I was going to be involved with music for the rest of my life. My childhood idol was my elementary music teacher. That she wheeled her piano from classroom to classroom, and she came in and, you know, she gave us music classes, and I joined her choir, and I joined her auto harp choir, and I played the piano for the 5th grade chorus, and, you know, she was my idol.
Since those days of idolizing her elementary school music teacher, Joan has had a lifetime of experience performing and teaching, but she still dreams of her next musical adventure. You're listening to Building Noble Hearts, a production of the Suzuki Association of the Americas. I'm Margaret Watts Romney. Here, we're taking a look at the learning environments in which children, parents, and teachers gain new knowledge and are encouraged to become fine individuals as well. We're talking with members of the Suzuki music community inspired by humanitarian violinist Shinichi Suzuki, and we're finding themes of good teaching everywhere, such as listening, community, creativity, and more. So, what musical experience does Joan wish for?
So this can be anything, right? Well, my very favorite pianist right now in the world is a man named Christian Zimmerman. He's just an incredible pianist. He was originally from Poland, but I think now he lives in Switzerland. And he refuses to come to the United States anymore for political reasons. It's a long story. And he's very elusive. It's hard to find out, you know, I can't find on the internet anywhere, where is he performing? But if I could find that out, I would try to hop on a plane and go and hear a concert. Well, the last time he played here in Philadelphia, many years ago, I just remember walking out of that auditorium and feeling like I'd had a religious experience. It just transcended all of us in the audience to another world. The tone, just the musical expression was just totally beyond what I'd experienced before.
Joan experienced transformation from listening. But not for the first time. Her life was first transformed by the music from the elementary school teacher that she idolized when she was a child. Just seeing the teacher walk into the room wheeling her piano gave her a thrill. She knew that music would fill the air, and all she wanted for the rest of her life was more of it. She also saw the difference that listening made in the lives of her own children. When they were young, they played violin and studied with Suzuki teachers. Their lives were immersed in music from the listening that all Suzuki teachers expect of their students, and the children lived in a house with musician parents as well.
Well, first of all, my own children are adopted. They're not biological. So I love to tell people that because they both became very excellent Suzuki violinists. They played beautifully in tune. They had beautiful musical expression. They played in orchestras, chamber music. They really had, a great experience musically. You know, it had to come from the listening. You know, my husband's also a musician, and people could easily have said, oh, well, they're good because you're both musicians. Well, we couldn't say that.
Her children became excellent musicians, not because of the possible DNA music talent passed on to them, but because of the environment they were immersed in. Score one for nurture. Just like a child listening to and learning the language of their parents, Joan's children learned the language of music by first simply marinating in the sound. As a teacher, Joan also saw the effects of listening immersion in her students, one in particular.
I ended up taking a couple of students with me to Japan to participate in a 10 piano concert there. Well, both of the students were put in a home for 2 weeks with a Japanese family, and their daughter was participating in this program. And that mother was very, very devoted to the whole Suzuki philosophy. And my student was in book five, and she heard this child in that home playing a particular piece in book five for 2 to 3 hours every day. And when she wasn't practicing, the mother had the CD on going over and over again. I mean, when she was there, she was playing a totally different piece on this concert. This was a piece supposedly somewhat later in her future. I hadn't even planned on her learning it. And when that student came home and came to my house for a lesson, she sat down and played that whole piece, and I had never given her a lesson on it before. And it's like a 12-page sonata, you know? And I thought, well, this really shows if you have that intense listening, it works.
Joan saw that listening transformed her children, her students, and she sees how listening expands her community today.
Well, one of my favorite things to do is attend recitals where my students perform or other students perform as well. And in our Philadelphia area, we have a Suzuki graduation program. Then we have an afternoon of recitals, and this includes not just piano, but violin and guitar, I believe, this year. So we divide the students up into three recitals. It's a long afternoon, but it is, to me, just one of the best afternoons in the whole world, is just hearing all those students perform. What draws me to it, I think, is that those particular students have the opportunity to polish a piece a little bit more than they might otherwise, and then they have the opportunity to perform in this recital, and we even have a rehearsal. We make a big deal about this. And it raises the level of, that raises the standards for all of the teachers in the area. And so for me, it just keeps me always searching for another level of excellence with my students.
In addition to raising the bar among the community of teachers and students, Joan enjoys these graduation recitals because they change her own perception of what is possible, what excellence she aims for with her own students. But why is listening so powerful? How does it engender a feeling of transcendence in the listener? How can it accelerate a child's musical development or bring excellence to a community? Well, probably because sound is powerful. We can close our eyes, but not our ears. We hear our mother's voice from before birth, even though we don't see her until days after we're born. To understand how intimate sound is, listen to this explanation from the Science Podcast Radio Lab from WNYC Studios. Here, they're interviewing two scientists, Anne Fernald and Jonah Lehrer.
We're used to thinking of sounds as being about something. Speech is always about something. But it feels to me more like touch. Touch isn't about something. If you whack me on the arm in a sudden, sharp way, I'm going to be startled. Or a gentle touch has a different effect. And I think, you know, actually, sound is kind of touch at a distance.
I was Anne Fernald, director of the Center for Infant Studies at Stanford. And when Anne says,
sound is more like touch.
That turns out to be literally the case. This is something I learned from a friend of mine, Jonah Lehrer.
My name's Jonah Lehrer.
Anne says, Jonah, thinking about sound as a touch.
More like touch.
I asked him, how does sound get into or touch your brain? Take us on that journey.
It's just waves of vibrating air. It's just your voice.
Touch at a distance.
Beginning your voice box compresses air, and that air travels through space and time into my ear. A little tunnel. Waves of diffuse vibrating air focused and channeled into my eardrum, which vibrates a few very small bones. And the little bones transmit the vibration into this salty sea where the hairs are. And the hair cells are fascinating. The hair cells become active when they are literally bent by a wave. They bend like trees in a breeze. And when these hair cells bend, charged molecules flood inwards and activate the cell.
So the sound triggers the bones disturbs the fluid rocks the hairs.
Yes.
And then the hairs set off essentially electricity?
Yes.
Huh.
That's the language of neurons.
All those changes from waves to bones to electricity, all those things were a trip on their way to being heard. It's only when the electricity finally forms a pattern in your brain, only when it's deep inside, that's when you hear something.
It feels to me more like touch. Sound is kind of touch at a distance.
In this episode called Sound as Touch, Anne Fernald's work is focused on the sounds mothers make to connect with their babies. It's as if the mothers are keeping a connection, keeping in touch with their babies, even if they are not holding them. Through sound, the mothers can touch at a distance. This is one reason the Suzuki method is so successful, because there is no more intimate interaction than that of physical contact. And as we just heard, sound is just that. Listening and music can transform, but words between people touch and influence deeply as well. Joan told me many times that listening had influenced her life. Most recently, she experienced how listening influenced the culture of the board of the Suzuki Association of the Americas.
We all spend a great deal of time just listening to the ideas of each other. And along with that is the safe environment that we are all in at that time. We are free to express our ideas without criticism, without feeling unimportant. It seems that all of us support each other both in listening to each other and in respecting what we each have to say. So to me, that's all very Suzuki.
Joan finds deep listening in all aspects of her life, from the boardroom to the classroom to the recital hall. And while she dreams of experiencing Christian Zimmerman in person and relishing again that feeling of transcending to another world, she finds little moments of transformation everywhere. If we are quiet and we listen, if we allow ourselves to be touched from a distance by music or words, perhaps we can welcome transcendence, Perhaps we will let ourselves be transformed. Perhaps we can grow and progress. As Joan said in an educational video she made about listening,
this is perhaps the single most important element for making steady progress. And progress leads to joy.
Do you have an influential educator in your life like Joan that you would like to recognize? Nancy Modell, Christy Felsing, and John Kendall are some of the people who have stars named after them in the Giving Galaxy of Stars on the Suzuki Association of the Americas website. Go to suzukiassociation.org to dedicate a star to your influential educator, and we may acknowledge them here on the podcast as well. Our theme music, Sun Up, is composed by Stephen Katz and Derek Snyder and performed by the Snyder Cello Army. Thank you to WNYC Studios for the use of Radiolab's explanation of sound from their episode Sound as Touch. You can find more of their ear candy shows anywhere you get your podcasts or at radiolab.org. The excerpts from Pictures at an Exhibition by Modest Mazorski were played by Alexander Gindin. And we receive artful and essential production assistance from Methuselah Podcast Productions. If you like what you heard today, leave us a review on iTunes or tell us your thoughts on our website discussion forum at suzukiassociation.org.